What's going on, everybody, and welcome back to the Hoops Corner. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, Iceman himself, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
It's been a long time. Shouldn't have left you without a dope beat to step to. It's been too long, man. Been way too long. I've missed you guys.
Oh, that was beautiful. The banger in the paint, a residential medical expert. Roshan Walia, how you feeling?
I don't know, man. It's been like, 2-3 years? We took a longer pause this season than we did all of COVID.
Yeah, it's actually true. I mean, COVID was the time for content, though, man. We had The Last Dance. We had, like, random drafts that we were doing. Now it's just, like, us battling through a sabbatical. We're like the Memphis Grizzlies, man. You can't hold us down. We'll sit most of the season, but we'll come back just at the very end. Like Desmond Bane.
Ben Simmons played in more games than we had podcasts in the last few months.
That's debatable, to be honest.
He may have had more rebounds in the past couple of months than we had podcasts.
We did come back sooner than LaMelo, though.
Oof, LaMelo, man.
Or Lonzo, if we want to go back that far.
Well, I mean, that's a whole other story.
Yeah. I don't like to besmirch Lonzo. I like Lonzo. LaMelo, I don't really care about. I can shit talk LaMelo all I want. But you guys didn't like my Memphis Grizzlies reference? You know, they set out most of the year, and then randomly Desmond Bane and Brandon Clark are playing, like, the last 15 games of the season. That's kind of like us coming back just for the playoff push, you know?
You're definitely the Desmond Bane of this podcast.
Yeah.
You don't think
I don't know if it's playoff push.
You don't think I'm Desmond Bane enough? Is that what you just said? Come on, man.
Oh my goodness.
Gotta rip out the gun show for you here.
Come on. I think Raj is the John Moran of this podcast, so I think he'd be pulling out the guns.
No.
Whoa. I follow the law here.
No, Raj is clearly Brandon Clark, man. Hamstring.
Injured, eh?
Yeah, growing injuries and all, you know?
Banger in the paint.
Yeah, man. What do you think we got?
I'll take Brandon Clark.
Proud Canadian Brandon Clark. I don't know if he's proud, but Canadian Brandon Clark.
He's a nice player. Like, he could make a nice little niche for himself in the NBA. Obviously, we're going way off topic, but I could see him playing in the NBA for 10 years.
I mean, we all like Brandon Clark. But let's get to it. It's been a long time, so, I mean, we could really start anywhere. You could start with, Kelly Oubre Jr. calling every ref a bitch after the game yesterday, which might have been, like, low-key one of the funniest moments in the league this year. You can talk about Draymond getting ejected again and Steph, like, looking like he was crying on the floor, which was a weird take. Or, you know, we can go, let's go west, Raj. I think you want to touch on a couple of big hitters over there.
Hey, these are like new big hitters, because if you told someone these teams are going to be the top of the West 2 or 3 years ago, you'd probably call me crazy. But if you look at the standings right now, you obviously have the Nuggets leading the pack as the number one seed. They've always been a really good regular season team, obviously winning the championship last year, and that experience. They're in a league of their own personally, but the teams right under them are Minnesota and OKC. And obviously the teams are fun to watch. They're exciting. OKC with the young guns, they kind of, with Shea leading the pack, they have a lot of different weapons. They can beat you in a lot of different ways. And then you have the Timberwolves, which I guess by Josh's token probably showed up 1 year too late, because Josh said they were going to be the number one seed in the West. But they're playing good basketball, and Kat's been out for a good chunk of the last 10 games. Rudy Gobert has been in and out of the lineup, but you've really seen the step that Ant has taken. So honestly, the West is very interesting, because when it comes to playoff time, you're still going to have the teams like the Warriors, you're going to have the Suns, you're going to have the Lakers, who are probably going to be the bottom seeds.
Are you though?
You will. The Clippers? Yeah, they're all going to make the playoffs.
What? No, not all of them. There's at least one of those teams not making it.
Yeah, either the Lakers or the Warriors are going to be out this year for sure.
Or the Suns.
The Suns aren't going
to. Or the Suns.
Okay, I said this in the preseason that this is going to happen. I told you that the Suns were going to be in the play-in. You guys were giving me shit. And where are they going to be right now? The play-in. And I also said they are going to miss the playoffs because they are not going to win two games in a row in the play-in because I thought they're going to be in 9-10. And what's going to happen? They're most likely going to be in 9-10 because they have the toughest schedule, or sorry, the second toughest schedule for the last 10 games that any team has played in the last 30 years. Think about that.
Yeah, that's
in terms of
wild.
The strength of schedule, the second toughest schedule in the last 30 years. That's insane. I mean, they did beat Denver in Denver.
There you go.
Jamal Murray wasn't playing. Got to have that little caveat there. But their upcoming schedule is just like absolutely brutal. So it would not surprise me to see them end up in 10th. I mean, they should end up in 9th most likely, but I think they're going to have to win two games to make the playoffs.
Oh my God, their upcoming schedule is crazy. OKC, New Orleans, Cleveland, winnable. New Orleans again. New Orleans has been hella hot, by the way. Two Clippers games at the Kings, at Minnesota. Woo!
Woo! Tough.
That's tough. But hey, regardless, you're going to have three or four teams in the bottom half of the West that have the experience, and then you're going to have two or three teams in the top part of the West that are going to be the young guns. And honestly, like I can make a good argument which team is probably the team that's the real contender this year to push the Nuggets. You can make a lot of arguments for OKC being the team with Shea leading the pack and MVP candidate. They just have so many bodies that play well together. They're hungry. And then you have a team like Minnesota, which obviously with Rudy Gobert being the anchor and being kind of the offensive weapon, they're really putting it together. But I'm leaning OKC. I really do think that the way they play, the confidence they have, and they're kind of playing with house money. And we have seen teams pick on Rudy Gobert in the past in the playoffs. And Kat's health is going to be always a question mark going into the playoffs. So honestly, right now, I'm saying OKC has a better playoff run than Minnesota.
Yeah, I think it really depends on the matchups. I know it's a cop-out, but you know, I think almost any team besides Denver can win a first-round series depending on who they get. And you know, if OKC gets the wrong team, they could be out in the first round, but even if they are out in the first round, I think you can consider this to be a successful season since a lot of people didn't think they were going to win more than 45 games. That was their over-under this year. A lot of people thought they'd be in the play-in. I was not one of those. I said they'd be a top three seed this year. I was right on that one, luckily. Not right on many, but I was
right
on that one.
Josh is just swimming in money right now from Bet365.
Oh, yeah. That's right, baby.
Not sponsored ad. Thank you very much.
Yeah, definitely not. You know, Minnesota, they definitely need Kat back by playoff time, and it doesn't really look like that's going to be happening. You know, the reporting around that is pretty, it's not great. They say he should be back at some point early in the playoffs. What does that mean exactly? It's not like hearing about Joel Embiid where they think he's going to come back before the regular season ends. So Minnesota just doesn't have enough quality depth if they don't have Kat, starting for them. So if he ends up not coming back by the first round of the playoff series, I can see them losing to whichever two of those three veteran teams like Golden State, Lakers, Suns, if they get them in round one.
Pray, just pray that they get Golden State and we get Rudy Gobert versus Draymond Green all over again.
That would be fantastic. I think they might actually beat the Lakers because they basically play the same type of style as a Lakers big ball, you know? But they've bullied the Lakers the entire season that they when they have played them. And then Phoenix, you would think that's a bad matchup for Minnesota, but Minnesota has so many wings that they can match up pretty well with Phoenix as well. So maybe it is just Golden State that might give them some problems.
You think they would beat the Lakers? I don't know, man. I feel like LeBron would
they would beat the Lakers.
I think LeBron would just go nuts on them.
Yeah, I feel like that inexperience. LeBron feeds off of teams that have some doubt and you really just need like a cohesive unit and you need leaders. And not to say Minnesota has no leaders, but I still think Ant probably needs a little more experience in the playoffs. He needs a playoff moment, really. And then there will be question marks, like you said, about Kat. So I honestly think the Lakers could probably push them, obviously depending on Anthony Davis's health and how many points can Rui get you. Like hopefully
Relax. Rui Hachimura.
I want my apologies. 2 games of 30-plus points from Rui or 25-plus?
Apologies for what?
You guys doubted him. They're the ninth seed. He's making a name for himself.
They're the ninth seed.
He hasn't
played good basketball since last April, May?
He's a playoff performer.
He's gone 10 months without playing good basketball, Raj. 10 months.
I don't know.
That's longer than that's not podcasting.
I don't know if you guys have seen the Lakers bench, but they basically get all their production from their starting lineup. So if any of those guys goes out, or, you know, D'Angelo Russell has the same type of performance last year in the playoffs that he did against Denver, they're playing with basically 4 guys if you want to count Rui. That's more like 3.5 with Rui, because he shows up half the time, maybe.
Oh, but they're getting Gabe Vincent back.
Ooh, scary. The guy who shoots like 20% from the three-point line with the Lakers.
Who's like 6 feet scary. Tall. Yes, that one. Josh, you've been a big proponent of our native Canadian brethren over the past couple of years. How do you think Shea and the rest of this Oklahoma City team would fare in the playoffs? Let's pick a fun matchup, like if they went against the Lakers or the Kings. Ooh, the Kings. Sabonis revenge series against the Thunder.
The Thunder?
Yeah.
I think the Thunder would kill the Kings, yeah, to be would. Honest. I'm actually hoping that the Kings don't make the playoffs this year. They are a fun team to watch. But, you know, without Herter in the lineup, it's sort of like the Lakers losing any of their starters. They're pretty thin on the bench. So they basically have 5.5 guys they're playing right now, now that Trey Lyles has been hurt as well.
Forget about the Kings. Forget I even mentioned them. How do we feel about these Thunder going into the playoffs with such young guys like Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren? Obviously, Shea's Shea. You know, whatever. We know what Shea's going to do in the playoffs.
No, for sure. The Thunder are very resilient. I mean, they've shown that in the last few games as well, but it's been the entire season, right? They're a type of team that doesn't get down on themselves no matter what the score is, and they're always going to fight back and play hard, and they have a lot of guys off the bench that are hungry to get more minutes. That's something that they've really kept with the entire season, is they've played 12-plus players throughout the course of the regular season, trying to see what they have, and they've been able to develop some players into being like real rotation players. Like, for example, Andrew Wiggins' brother, Aaron Wiggins, is a better player than he is right now. He's been very solid for them off the bench pretty much the entire season.
Is that actually his brother?
Nobody thought that would happen. I think it's his brother, right?
I think they just have the same last name.
I thought they were brothers.
Oh my god, Josh is just making family connections here.
Come on, man.
Are we sure about this?
I don't think so.
Hmm.
Let me look this up real quick.
100% they're not brothers.
All right, so brothers from another mother. Aaron Wiggins has been a better player than Andrew Wiggins this year. People don't think he can shoot, but he's shooting like 40%+ from the three-point line. And overall, like, OKC's biggest problem in the playoffs that I can see, I think might end up being Chet Holmgren's offense. Because as, you know, the season has gone along, especially the last 10 games or so, he's either getting tired or he's hit the rookie wall. He doesn't look the same. Like, he's not making the same crisp spin moves off the dribble against big guys. He's not able to get into the paint against smaller players like he was halfway through the season. Things aren't as easy for him in watching him the past 10 games. And I can see teams sort of incorporating the same type of defensive schemes as what teams used to do against Dirk Nowitzki, where they would put a 6'7 guy on him, take away his three-point shot, and then just push him out, because obviously the rules change come playoff time, which they have. Maybe that's the main reason why he hasn't played well the last 10, 15 games, is because, as we know, the NBA decided to change the rules halfway through the season and allow a lot more contact. So I think that has affected guys like, you know, Chet, even a guy like Steph Curry, guys that are more slim. When they get pushed off ball, they haven't really adjusted the physicality yet.
And it is March, right? I'm sure, coming from college, Chet's got to be just tired, right? A lot more games, a lot more playing time, a lot more travel.
He hasn't missed a game yet, I don't think, right?
I don't think so. And considering that we thought he was going to be, we didn't think, but he had a strong case for Rookie of the Year to start the year until basically, like, the All-Star break, and he was absolutely on fire. So I mean, I don't blame the guy for hitting the rookie wall at this point. As long as he shows up in the playoffs, who really cares, right? If he needs, like, a couple of games off or whatever. Take your time, young man. Because it really matters in a month.
I think one thing that will be very interesting is when OKC is in the playoffs and teams are going to focus in on Shea, who is going to take that secondary scorer lead? Just because Shea is really...
He's been amazing this year.
He has. I just feel like there hasn't been many games where Shea has not performed and J-Dub has carried. And not to say that he needs to do that 5 or 6 games in a series. It just seems like in the playoffs, when you can game plan a little more, you can force the ball out of Shea's hand, make other players beat you, there's going to be, I think, reasonable question marks of if those players can show up in those big moments. And obviously, the same can be said about Minnesota. Obviously, Ant, the offense runs through him. But I would argue there's probably, if Kat does come back, there's probably a few more consistent scorers that have done it in the playoffs before. Obviously, looking at Mike Connolly and Kat in those instances. But hey, I honestly think OKC is such a fun team to watch. Shea's been killing it. He's probably had the most underrated rise to stardom that I can remember.
Since Jimmy Butler, probably. Right?
Are you guys...
Started as like a 2-point-per-game player, and then all of a sudden he exploded on the scene. Nobody expected that, right?
Are you
That's true.
Both forgetting a guy who was drafted during a Taco Bell commercial here? Maybe a 2-time MVP? Finals MVP? No? Just forget about that guy.
Yeah,
it's a little bit different, though.
It is a bit different.
How?
What? Peter's blushing.
I'm so confused. Peter. How is it different? Wasn't Shea a lottery pick?
No, he was. I'm still talking about like the early seasons. Like you could see with Jokic, the type of skill set he had. The biggest question with him was like, is he going to be aggressive? Is he actually going to score points during the game? His first couple of seasons, because you could see he could do everything else, right?
No.
Nobody expected that from him, obviously, that he was going to be a superstar, but...
In the first couple of seasons, the questions were, can this guy get minutes over Jusuf Nurkić?
And they decided that he was a better project than Nurkić, and that was obviously the correct decision. I would argue not... I think, obviously, Jokic's peak is higher than Shea's right now. But I would say that Jokic has had more of a steady climb, and I would say that Shea's had more of a sudden rise. Not to say that Shea is higher than Jokic or whatnot, but that increase has been a lot more marked with Shea. Like, if we look back at 2 years ago, Shea would have never been in the consideration for even all NBA team, right? Jokic had a few years where you were like, you could make a case that he was putting up really good numbers. He was playing good basketball. He just played in a smaller market.
You could also argue that OKC was just hiding him, you know, by not playing him because they were
That's
tanking.
True. That's so. True.
They were definitely
but that, him, that increase is crazy.
Y'all, prisoners of the moment with this Jokic slander, man. Jesus.
Now, we're not slandering him. He's
straight up slander.
One of the greatest players in NBA history.
You said that Shea's rise to stardom is more unexpected than Jokic's. How wild.
I'm not saying unexpected. I'd say it's more like the sudden rise to stardom. I haven't seen that
in a long time. Go back to 2018 Nikola Jokic when everyone was calling him fat and he couldn't deliver in the playoffs. 2 years later.
But he made it to the playoffs, right?
Shea's been in the playoffs.
Like, he brought his team to the playoffs.
Yeah, Shea's been in the playoffs. Shea had more early playoff experience than Jokic did.
With Clippers?
With LA and with OKC. Shea was in the playoffs during the bubble.
That was 4 years ago. Yeah, Shea had a game winner at one point, too.
Come on, man. Y'all just forgetting because Shea literally took a year off, basically a full year off, given that he took off 2 half seasons. With OKC. Come on, man. He literally spent a year training on, like, working on his mid-range jumper.
In the gym by himself.
Yeah.
When he supposedly had plantar fascia injuries.
Man, it was just him and Sam Presti in there.
Just in terms of this year, though, in the playoffs, like, I have no worries about J-Dub at all. I think he is a playoff player. Like, he's built for the playoffs, literally. Like, it seems like he gained like 30 pounds this year. He looks like a tank out there.
That's a big boy.
And yeah, I mean, his physicality is going to hold up in the playoffs. I think he's going to be a consistent, probably 25 point per game guy in the playoffs, honestly. But as Raj mentioned, beyond that point, I think that you have a lot of questions because I really don't think that, depending on the matchup, like if they get Sacramento in round one, I think Chet will be fine on offense. But, you know, if they get a more physical player who can stay with them on the perimeter, like say if they play the Lakers and they're playing against Anthony Davis, that could be a major problem. And then you're counting on Josh Giddey to show up, you know, big in the playoffs. And he has been very good lately, obviously, but you don't want to rely on that. And I can see why they kept him and why they continue to keep playing him big minutes. Because come playoff time, like you need that third scorer. You need that third guy that can handle the ball. And he can be that in stretches. And if not, then you're throwing Isaiah Joe out there. And we know how standstill shooters do in the playoffs. You can go back to a lot of different examples, like Duncan Robinson in his first couple of years didn't perform until he sort of figured it out along the way in certain matchups. There's been a lot of, you know, Gary Trent, big example there with the Raptors. He just didn't show up at all. There's a lot of different examples over the Fred VanVleet until he had a kid. He basically couldn't do anything because he's short and all he could do was shoot at that time and you just put length on him and then you'd know he wasn't gonna be able to do anything. So it's different come playoff time. Like you need big guys that can create off the dribble and they have three of those players, but obviously one of those guys in Giddey teams are just gonna play way off of. So I think they have a more reliable offense in Minnesota, that's for sure, because they have an identity on offense and they play really fast. And against a lot of teams, that'll get them through. You know, Minnesota is just they're a really bad offensive team too.
It also feels like, I don't know, this might just be me, my like bias here, but I think Shea's one-on-one game is more, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, it's more solid than Ant's,
Refined.
yeah, refined than Ant's one-on-one game. Like, if I need a bucket down the stretch and I need to pick between the two, I'm going to Shea's pull-up over Ant's, I don't know, chaotic drives or his, like, crazy 27 pull-up, 27-foot pull-ups, like, anything. Shea just more like consistent. And obviously he's older, he's more experienced, so he should be more consistent, right? Like it's just part of the process.
And
Yeah,
just going back to
Shea
the
knows where he
execution
wants to go.
side of things, like OKC doesn't turn the ball over,
Yeah.
right? And Minnesota, they're one of the worst turnover teams in the league, especially come crunch time.
OKC has played 72 games so far this season. How many games has Shea missed?
Four.
Two?
Two. It's a fucking
Wow.
Iron Man, this guy. In those two games, by the way, Jalen Williams had 18 and 8, and then in the loss against Houston the other day, he had 23 and 10. And he showed up big in the fourth quarter against the Houston that game. So,
Yeah, I mean, he tied the game to go in overtime,
yeah.
so.
Again, great player. I think playoffs, different beast. Like, and one thing just to touch upon, OKC plays very fast. It'll be interesting how that translates to playoff basketball because the game does slow down.
True.
Well, the good thing is they have two of the best isolation scorers in the NBA, so that'll help.
Yeah, and they have Gordie Hayward.
Yeah. I mean, there's a chance that he actually plays well in the playoffs, right? Like, he hasn't really done much in the regular season, but maybe they're just saving him come playoff
Yo, I
time.
saw him hit
You
a
never
layup
know.
yesterday against Houston. Big things.
His first points as a Thunder.
Wow. Maybe by the end of the year we'll have more podcasts than Gordon Hayward points as a Thunder.
We got to keep the streak alive, man.
Yeah, same with Gordon Hayward's streak. Can we move on? I mean this broke like a few days ago, and with the Ohtani news from last week, we really have to talk about Jontay Porter just, you know, taking his own unders or telling somebody to take his unders on bets, right? Like betting,
Allegedly.
allegedly, fine. The NBA is obviously investigating now, but in two separate instances, DraftKings has reported that Jontay Porter's unders were the biggest payers of the night, which is like a wild thing. Like, imagine, how would I say this? Imagine Mike Muscala being on a betting sheet right now, You know what I mean? That's basically the same thing as Jonte Porter being on the betting sheet. Why is he even on it? That's the first question. Second question, you couldn't, like, separate this a bit, you know? Maybe give it, like, 3 or 4 weeks in between, not, like, a week and a half. Come on, Jonte. And pick some overs once in a while, dog. Have some faith in yourself.
I think the worst thing is he probably knew he was going to play a few minutes in the games, and he probably just got too eager. But hey, allegedly too eager. Again, they need to do what Europe does. They have a max on some of the prop bets based off of how big the player is and what the prop bet is. Like, yeah, if you're going to risk your career for a max bet of $2,800 on the over, well, good for you. Do that. Enjoy it. And if you get caught, you're going to get pretty much kicked out of the league indefinitely. You shouldn't be allowing people to put indefinite size bets, like 500,000 or something was what I read on one of the articles, I think through The Score, which is just absurd that someone bet $500,000 on an under, what, 2.5 points or under 1.3 or something like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of conflicting reports out there as to like what the max was.
Yeah.
There were some saying that most sites had it at $2,000, which is pretty normal unless you're a big loser, then they allow you to bet more money, obviously. So there was another report that I saw that the max for certain sites was like $80,000. I never saw the 500,000 though. Like most sites don't let you do that unless you're like, you know, who's the biggest one? I think it was, what's the boxer's name? Mayweather. Mayweather is like famous for putting out like $1 million bets, and they allow him to do that because he loses so much money. No, right?
The Mayweather and Drake ones are all sponsored anyways, man. That's fake money.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. Come on, man.
They have a free bet, like, yeah. Get this many likes and this many new people on our betting site.
I don't believe any of those, but the one that I saw with Jonte was like a six leg same game parlay, $80,000 paid out, like 1.1 million, which is more than double his salary this year. So, you know, if that was him or, you know, someone in his family, whatever, close friend that got paid out that 1.1, I mean, if you don't think you're going to make the league, why not? I mean, I know why not. I'm obviously kidding. But, you know, I can see the appeal.
You go to jail.
Pure relegation, man. So what do you guys think his sentencing should be if he is found guilty, of course? Are we kicking him out of the league? Simple as that?
It's tough because it is up to the commissioner. I saw that point made on a different podcast that it actually is written in the CBA that it is at the discretion of the commissioner. So there's no real rule about this. So whatever he sets for Jonte is probably going to be the rule going forward, unless there's like extenuating circumstances behind it. Like maybe he got into a bad situation with the mafia or something and they forced him to do this. If that's the case, it's a whole nother thing. These, you know, his family's being threatened. Michael Porter Jr. is being threatened at gunpoint or something, unless Jonte Porter hits his unders. And that's why he was holding his eye during a non-play. Then maybe he gets a lesser sentence.
Yo, the clips are so funny, man. If you watch those things, you gotta find them. There's ones where
he has to play. The funniest
thing is like,
no, it's not just that, but like he's purposefully not touching the ball, like tapping the ball away on a rebound instead of just like grabbing it, like that kind of stuff. Going straight to the coaching staff, oh, okay. Like holding his eye.
What was the second injury in the second game?
I think they're both eye injuries.
No, I don't think so. I think it was like a leg injury or something, right?
Because the issue too is he has to play for the bet to start, like for that part. Because if you don't play, it counts as a DNP, and it's a push. You're muted.
Yeah, it's just voided, right? But that's the whole point of like doing your unders instead of your overs. Like imagine wanting to hit that over 1.3 and he just comes in the game just jacking threes. It's like a two-way center, you know? He's like, oh yeah, I've been working on my three in Mississauga all week, coach. I got this.
Well, they showed one clip from the first game, I think it was. He caught the ball behind the three-point line wide open, and he caught it and basically ran into like a layup, right? Like they called him for traveling or out of bounds because of that. But I think in the second game, I think his under was like, it was 5.5 rebounds. He started the game, he had 3 rebounds in like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And then at that point, he came out with the other injury that I was referring to. I don't think it was the eye that time. It was something else, like an elbow or something, something random. But yeah, the fact that he started out with 3 rebounds that he probably did not intend to catch, and he sort of had to, or else it would have looked super suspicious with nobody else around. Like, imagine he, like, remember when we used to play 2K and we were losing by like 4 points in the last couple seconds? And then one of us changed sides. We changed controllers to the computer side. And then we purposely step out of bounds. That's what he would basically have to do in those scenarios. Like, imagine he's playing against like a 3-point shooting center. And there's nobody around the paint. And the ball comes to him on a rebound. And he like catches the ball out in front of him. And then sort of throws the ball out of bounds. He would have basically had to do that if he wasn't going to go out with those random injuries that he told the trainer about. So.
Oh, man. I would love to be in the locker room.
I'd love to be the trainer, be like, wait, so how'd you hurt your eye? Like,
yeah, what just happened on that play? Russell Westbrook did what on that play?
See, there's a speckle of dust in there? What's the problem here, man? So he's going to China, right? Like, come on.
Pretty much.
You can rig games out there. I think it's a lot easier to rig games in CBA than here.
Yeah. Breaks the CBA, plays in the CBA.
There you go.
You can join your boy Wilson Chandler out there.
Yeah, Wilson's retired, man. Show some respect.
Okay.
Come on, man.
I thought he was out there putting up 45 and 20 again.
No, man. He's just a retired player. Unrelated, because I'm talking about Chinese basketball. You guys got to find these videos of Stefan Marbury on Instagram. Dude is hilarious. He's just chilling in Beijing. He speaks Mandarin all the time on his stuff. He's just living life out there, having fun. It's good shit, man. Good content.
Yep.
No longer eating Vaseline?
No, man. Steph's a new man now. No longer depressed. Just happy and living life, man. Embracing his Chinese stardom.
Culture.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw they built statues for him out there, so he's obviously doing very well.
Yeah, man. Why wouldn't you be? All right. Josh, you got any stats corner for us here?
Let's take a look-see here. Excited. Give me a moment.
When was the last time we did stats corner? 6 months ago.
I have some stuff, and it might be a little bit old.
6 months ago.
It's 5-month-old stats.
It might be. All right. All right, we'll start with this one. Can you name the most efficient mid-range shooters this season? And the minimum attempts in this graph, anyway, is at least 130 attempts.
Worst efficiency shooters.
No, best. Best. Oh. And sorry, it's a minimum of 100 attempts.
Well, I'm going to go with Shea, since we just talked about him for like 20 minutes.
Shea is at number 10, and he has taken, looks like, the third most out of the top 10.
Okay.
And sorry, this is any field goal or?
Mid-range field goal percentage.
Mid-range. Okay, mid-range.
So who has the highest percentage in the NBA with at least 100 attempts? And Shea is at 48%, by the way. So everyone above him is above 48%.
Mm-hmm.
If you need hints, let me know.
Mm.
Come on, Raj.
Don't let me say... Yeah, no, I'm trying to be... trying to get the number one here, but I think I'm going to go for number 50. Who shoots very efficiently in the mid-range?
This is embarrassing.
De'Aaron Fox.
We've been off for a long time now. Come on. No, De'Aaron Fox is not in the top 10.
Give me Terwell.
He's number 7 at 49.6%.
Ah.
Okay. How about Jay Will?
He is not in this, no.
Oh, jeez. Peter, sweep me.
DeMar?
Surprisingly, no. Oh. He is not.
Wow.
He doesn't shoot that efficiently. Volume-wise, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure volume-wise, yeah. He's probably up there.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. How are we forgetting this guy? Okay. I got a
feeling. Oh, wait. Maxi?
Nope.
KD?
Number 5, 51.5%.
50-40-90 okay, this year, man.
He's been all right.
Booker.
Booker is number 9, 48.5%. Might as well just do the top 10 at this point. So you've got, I think, 4 of them so far.
Yeah, we're still missing the big guns, though.
There's one other big guy in this list.
Is Jimmy in this?
Steph?
Steph isn't on the list. Jimmy is also not on the list.
Mid-range shooters.
Bam.
Efficient.
No.
I'm just throwing out names now, Raj. I'm not taking...
Oh, all Jalen right, Brunson. I'm
turning into a volume shooter.
Surprisingly, no. Good guess, though. The top two guys are from the top three seeds in each conference. So there's one from each top three seed in each conference.
Okay, Ant?
No.
It's not Jokic. No, nope. I don't think so.
There's Murray? Somebody from his team, though.
Mid-range?
Okay, oh, KCP.
Nope.
MTJ.
There you go. Oh my Number God. 2, 54.2%. He has been incredibly efficient since the All-Star break, especially shooting like 100% from the field, basically.
Bet his overs, Jonte.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. Is it Jason Tatum?
No.
Give me KP.
No.
Oh, that's disappointing.
I'm not sure if KP's taken that many mid-range this year.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Dame? Dame doesn't take twos.
Dame, no. He's not on there.
Top three in the East,
man, we
eh?
Suck. We suck.
No, it's been a while, man. It's okay. Coming back, Jaylen Brown.
No. Damn. Not from that team.
Damn. I was feeling real nice about that one. No way it's Giannis.
No way.
But you're on the right track.
So someone from Milwaukee.
Not Middleton Dame. Hasn't played enough.
Chris Middleton, number 1, 57.2% on 166 shots.
12 games.
No, he barely just made it.
I guess he's exclusively taking mid-range shots this year.
There you go. All right, how many we got left?
And you got a few left. I think you have 4 left now. So this guy is from a top 6 or 7 seed right now. It's either 6 or 7. He's one of the best guards in the East. Yeah, he was an all-star this year.
Tyrese Halliburton?
54%, 139 attempts. The big guy is on a lottery team. He's in and out. He had a massive 10-game stretch a couple weeks ago. And he was averaging like 24 and 14.
Oh, DeAndre.
He has a very Ayton. Dumb nickname. Yes, Dominating.
Dominating.
53.4% this
Sick
year.
Sick name if you didn't give it to yourself.
Indeed. Indeed. And then you have a guard who has taken over a team, and they've been actually slightly better since he has taken over.
Oh, Jalen Green.
And they're currently in the play-in in the Eastern Conference.
Kobe White.
He's a lead
Kobe White?
Nope.
Oh, DeJounte.
DeJounte Murray, 50.2% on 211 attempts.
Wow.
And you got two more, I believe. I'm not sure if you named this other guy, but one is from an Eastern Conference team, and he was an all-star this year, and he's been one of the best guards in the NBA. He's been injured recently.
Raj said Brunson already, right?
Yeah.
Oh, Donovan Mitchell.
East all-star.
There you go. 48.7%.
Maybe coming back.
And lastly.
Hopefully coming back on Friday. That'd be nice.
Yeah, for sure. Get him back before the playoffs.
Yeah.
And the last guy, I'm not sure if you named or not, but he's Kevin Durant's teammate.
Yeah, right.
Bradley Beal.
I just said Kevin Booker. Come on, man.
I said Booker already.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why. I was like.
I'm just going to say. How'd you miss that from me fucking that up? All right.
Nice.
Well, I thought you meant Kevin's and Booker's teammate. I'm like, oh, Bradley Beal.
No, sorry. Nope.
I like it. I like it.
We can do one more if you want to.
Yeah, it's,
or we can
right, hammer it out.
Let's do it. Let's get some. Let's get some redemption. We can't get.
All right.
As
can
bad
you
as
name
one.
The best defensive teams in the NBA post All-Star break via defensive rating?
Okay, Minnesota.
Minnesota number 4.
New York.
New York, number two.
Someone better than New York? Wow. Wow.
The Bucks?
The fact I have to look it up is not a good sign. 12, number 12.
Okay.
Magic.
Number one, 106.8 defensive rating with two of the best defensive players in the NBA.
Wow.
Told you Magic were going to be good this year, man.
Mm-hmm.
Told you.
They do it all by defense because their offense is doggy doo-doo.
It also helps that most of the East sucks.
That doesn't hurt.
Yeah, if they get a guard who can score next year, they're cooking.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's get Donovan Mitchell there. Ooh.
That would be nice.
They'll never go.
Yeah, then you lose out on some defense. Yeah.
You got two Western Conference teams.
Two West.
Pellies?
Number three. Yeah, someone that they didn't think you were going to get.
Nice. Good pick.
Come on.
Good pick.
Come on now.
And who's the last one?
The Clippers?
No, they are.
Dead last.
28th.
Since the All-Star break?
Since the All-Star break.
I mean Denver.
Denver number five.
Bang, bang.
Wow. Bam. That's why you number one in fantasy, Peter.
Gonna win it this year, man. Two-time champ after this year. Jeez. Talk to him. Two-time champ, boy.
Hey, not last place. I'll take it.
Yo, yeah. Good hoops corner. Or a good stats corner, Josh. We're coming back, man. We got to get back into the flow of things, but
let's go, man. Mid-season form right here. Oh, my.
Yeah. We're a bit rusty post-All-Star break, we're going to get there.
We just came back from Cancun after the All-Star break, man. Except I wish we came back from Cancun.
That'd be nice.
We're revving up for the playoffs right now.
Yeah. Yeah, we're getting there. All right, and on that note, I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. You can find us on all the socials. I'm talking Instagram, TikTok, X. Do you call it X or Twitter, Josh? I know you're on it a lot more. Twitter?
Still Twitter.
Still Twitter, eh? Yeah, the URL is still Twitter. It's forever Twitter. All the major
socials. It doesn't sound right otherwise.
X. X. Scandalous. What a name. Give us those 5-star reviews. You can find us on all the major podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple, Google, whatever. Whatever you're listening to us on right now. And until next time, peace.